Greetings, old Haleyburians and members of the wider Haleybury community, wherever and whenever you are. This is Keith White from the Class of 62, bringing you the second of our regular podcast series using material from the Haleybury Archives. First up, let's have our quiz question from Bill Waters, Head of Haleybury Heritage and Archives.
Thanks, Keith. And now to today's question. Who was the first girl to attend Haleybury College?
Thanks, Bill. Something to think about. Answer later in this podcast. Feedback. Thanks to the dozen or so old Haleyburians who sent me their comments on episode 1. All very positive and most encouraging. We had over 130 hits on the OHA podcast link, which is most pleasing for a first episode. It would be really nice in future to get your feedback as short sound files so we can include them in upcoming episodes. Use voicemail or something similar on your phone and email the file to me at my home address, redhillsouth@icloud.com. One word, all lowercase. If you're not familiar with the technology, I'm sure your grandkids can help. And please tell us who you are and what year you left Haleybury. We'd love to hear from you. On with the show. Our first segment continues from the last podcast and is taken from an interview I did with Bill Waters talking to Haleybury legend Jim Brown in 2012. In this extract, Jim talks about the last decade of the Aikman years, the 1990s.
Okay, well, just moving on from the 80s, there seems to have been a proportion of council in the early 1990s who became dissatisfied with aspects of the Aikman Way. Do you think the staff in general were aware of this? And if so, what was the basis for this sort of
Okay, process? Well, I think the answer to your question is probably no, the staff weren't aware of what these tensions were, not at least for some considerable time. What was the basis of the discontent? I suppose a concern about enrolments, because after all, the council had the responsibility for the financial viability of the school, and particularly the falling enrolments at Castlefield. There was also a view, I think, that the school needed some change of direction, a view that the discipline was too severe. There was a problem with bullying on buses, the use of the cane, the approach at Pelican, which was pretty harsh from the warden of Pelican, and in the curriculum terms, perhaps we were too reliant on a traditional curriculum and not enough, perhaps, new emphasis.
Would it be true to say that really, as you state, the staff themselves weren't particularly aware of these issues because the schools seemed to be functioning as well as ever?
Functioning in the same sort of way. I mean, a head who's been in office for a period of time has call it a routine, if you like, a program, a calendar for the year, and things seem to operate in much the same sort of way. It's when you have a change of leadership, a change of direction, that the staff starts to notice that things are happening.
Yeah. So would it be true to say that you didn't really notice any falling away in the performance in academics, sport, music or drama during the early 1990s?
Well, I would deny that there was any diminution in performance in academic terms. I went back and had a look at the scholars list from 1991 onwards. If you have a look at that in your records, you'll see that the school had quite an outstanding record. The honour boards indicated students who had an enter score of 95, or top 5% in the state. The scholars list, I think, of the honour boards demonstrate that. I had some statistics which I gave to Robert Parker when I was involved in his first year, that we had a bad year in 1971 where the HSC pass rate was only 73%. The year before, in 1970, it had been 84%. That's a significant drop. Why? Because David Bradshaw was overseas and wasn't his own director of studies. We had another bad year. It got back to 80 and 81 in the next 2 years. In 74, it fell away to 73%. That was Michael Aikman's first year. And these are the sort of things that the schools are measured by. But if you look after that, it rose from 80% in 1976 into the 90s by 1983 and stayed there right through until the end of what was then the HSC. And you can see from the figures that a number of those years are 99%. So it was quite outstanding in terms. In 1999, which is, if you like, a measure of Aikman's boys, 10% of the students were in the top 1% of the state, and 51% of students at Haleybury were in the top 10%, half of our students. And we talk about 180, 200 students, I guess. I didn't look up the numbers. But that's a measure of the school's success and the school's standing in the community, I think. And so to say that there was a diminution in academic performance in the early 90s, I don't believe it's correct.
I'd agree with that, and it's interesting. I was a parent in the 90s, and I think as a group we were very pleased with the academic performance of students within the school. So it's probably more the other points you mentioned in terms of the educational trends and things that might become a source of discontent for some people.
So just adding to that one more point, that the VCE was introduced statewide in 91-92, fully introduced in 92, and it was being introduced into a conservative institution which had put not too much emphasis on teacher assessment, but the emphasis all the way on exams. But we coped with that extremely well. So school assessment well handled by the staff, and I believe that sort of continued on. Michael Aitken, incidentally, I've got a quote, said 1992 was the greatest year in the school's history at one point. Now, I guess he's looking at a number of different things, but he certainly was very pleased with the performance in 92. And if we have a look at sport, you know, if you have a look at the number of premierships in particular years, we were still producing premierships. Maybe they weren't the crickets and the footballs, but in 1990 we had soccer, cross-country, tennis, volleyball, which were four. 93 we had five premierships. Mm.
So by those sorts of criteria, we were still successful.
Yes.
Very successful.
That's right. Ways. And music, drama, the third dimension we talked about a minute ago, I believe we were performing again at high level. Mm. We were having a tattoo every second year, we were having players, and we were having performances.
Well, let's move into the 1990s and ask a few questions about the Tipler Report. Were you involved in any way with that?
Certainly not. No. I've never seen a copy of the Tipler Report. I don't know where the archives are. They should have one.
We haven't seen one at this stage, but Lee Edmonds refers to it in his book.
Yes, he does, and he didn't share a copy with me, but I do know a few little things. I was interviewed for it, as were a number of staff, I think, and senior staff. I understand the council was divided about it. It's interesting that Tipler himself had done previously a report on Geelong Grammar School, and I think that's where they got the idea from, or some of the council got the idea to have Tipler to come in. And I believe it's true to say that a number of the recommendations he made at Geelong Grammar were put into effect and subsequently reversed. So I'm not sure that he has a great reputation. And the other interesting thing, reading Lee Edwards' book, is that his key recommendation was to close Castlefield down, because it wasn't viable, and Keysborough was badly placed and should be closed too, sold off, and the school should re-establish at Berwick. Now I ask you, have a look at Keysborough today, have a look at the Castlefield, have a look at Berwick, and I think he was totally wrong.
Strong point, well made.
Fascinating stuff. Isn't it great to have such access to Jim's profound understanding of the school's history? We'll continue this interview in the next episode leading up to the Pargeter years. Our next segment is introduced by Gordon Hawley, OH1965, who, as I mentioned in the first episode, has recently completed a 5-year task of converting hundreds of cassette tapes in our archives into digital format. Over to you, Gordon.
Thanks, Keith. The guest speaker at the Founders' Day Assembly on the 9th of February 1994 was Ian Henderson. Ian retired on the 11th of October 2018 after 25 years as the face of Victoria's 7pm ABC News Bulletin. And so it seemed appropriate at this time to listen to what Ian had to say about his time at Halebury. Ian is introduced by Principal Michael Aikman.
Our guest speaker will need little introduction. You will immediately recognise him as the principal newsreader at Channel 2. Mr. Henderson attended the school for 12 years, leaving in 1970, so that his final 2 years were here at Keysborough, and a very austere place in those early days it was. In his final year, he won the History Prize, he won a Commonwealth Scholarship, went up to Monash, where he completed an Honours Arts degree. He then commenced his career as a journalist. From 1987 to 1990, Mr. Henderson was European correspondent for the ABC. He returned to Australia as news editor for ABC TV and now has a high profile as newsreader each weeknight. It's a great delight to welcome a prominent old Haleburian back to the school, and I invite him now to address us, Mr. Ian Henderson.
Thank you. Ian Henderson in Keysborough, but this is not the ABC News. But it is, for me, a great pleasure to be here and to have the opportunity to speak to you. And it is something of a newsworthy event, for me anyway, to take some liberties with a song that we all know well. It's a case of 24 years on, growing older and bolder, shorter in wind, yes, but with memory strong. The strongest memories I have are of the comradeship of fellow students, some of whom I'm privileged to count still as my closest friends. But I must confess, sir, a number of painful memories also left their mark. There was the mark of Mrs. Cudahy's sand shoe on my hand after an orgy of smashing milk bottles at the back of the Castlefield campus in grade one. There was also the mark of Frank Northcote's cane on my backside in form one. I earned that stripe for disrupting a senior maths class with my preparation for a scripture exam. I'd been outside the door shouting a passage from the catechism. The passage was rather appropriately titled, What is Sin? But I didn't appreciate the irony at the time. Needless to say, nowadays I'm more careful with milk bottles and I'm less inclined to shout. It's been a long journey from school to journalism and finally the newsreader's desk at the ABC. But looking back to my time here at Halebury, it's possible to see some signposts along the way. There were the occasional articles written for the Key and the liberal arts newspaper, Crossbow. There were teachers who encouraged a fascination with cultures beyond our shores and who invited students to see themselves as citizens of the world. In particular here, let me pay tribute to Ronald Plon, Brian Clark, the late Ian Bowe and the late Phil Pritchard, for lighting the torch that guided this former student to the demanding job of foreign correspondent. But there are other links as well. There was my time in the school debating team where we learnt to weigh up and deliver arguments and perform before a public audience. I well remember our inaugural debate against the girls of St Leonard's. We were asked to speak against the proposition that boys make mischief in public and girls make mischief in private. The school magazine of that year records that we won the argument, but that the girls won the contest on the grounds that they were better looking. It's funny, that's still a disadvantage I suffer next to Jennifer Kite. But fourthly, and I think most importantly, there was a tradition at Halebury of liberal education which encouraged students to ask why and come up with the answers. That is a journalist's stock and trade, and it's something that I've been doing ever since. Coming back, though, after 24 years, you can't but be struck by, in the physical sense at least, just how much things have changed. Halebury now stretches across four campuses, not just two, as in my day. Bradshaw is a house, not the headmaster, and there are, I'm told, 24 houses now in all, not just eight, as there were in my day. Many of them bear the names of my former teachers. Then, of course, there's this magnificent building in which we're all privileged to be today. Back in those days, if we spoke of a great hall, we were probably talking about the number of goals the first 18 kicked. This hall and all the wonderful facilities you have at your disposal here are a credit to the school, the council and the principal. I know this Founders Day is a special one for Mr. Aikman. It marks his 20th anniversary in the job. And therefore, I think it's an appropriate time to pay tribute to his achievements. Well done, sir. Founders Day is also an appropriate time to ponder the vexed question of the merits of tradition versus change. On the face of it, they seem like opposites. Change by its nature involves moving on from past practices. But I'd put it to you that they're really part of one and the same thing. Tradition, I believe, gives us the secure platform from which we can address with self-confidence the challenges of today and tomorrow. The founder of this school, Charles Rendell, was a traditionalist in his espousal of discipline, excellence and church values, as well as his love for cricket and the classics. In this, he was a man of his time, but in another sense, he was also a man ahead of his time. That is, in his commitment to liberal education. Don't laugh, he brought what for the time were new subjects, like modern history and maths, and according to the school historian, he encouraged students within limits to think for themselves. Some of Charles Rendell's views, though, sit uncomfortably with us today. His reported disdain for things Australian, for example, was understandable perhaps when Victoria was still a colony of England in the 1890s, but which jars our sense of national pride in the 1990s. One rather wonders what Charles Rendell would make of Australians regularly thrashing the old country in his beloved game of cricket. So there are times when we have to part company with the old thinking. When we look at the progress of the school, we see another tradition here. That's a pragmatic tradition of adapting to current realities. The school that Rendell founded, I believe, is still here today because it has succeeded in redefining itself to meet the prevailing social conditions, in other words, changing. This, I believe, is the secret of its ongoing success, which has had its most recent expression in the Aikman years, by any standard, an era of considerable re-evaluation, expansion and change. Since I was here, several traditions have gone by the wayside. The boarding school, cadets, scouts, those caps which used to earn us the name Cherry Tops on the streets of Hampton and Brighton. Now that may make some of us old boys a bit misty-eyed, but it seems to me that Palebury is the impressive institution it is today because successive headmasters and school councils have cannily read social and demographic changes and stayed ahead of the game. That for me is one of the great lessons of this school, and it's a great example to its student. Honour your traditions, but don't be afraid to question them in the light of current social realities, because institutions which don't do that inevitably go the way of the dinosaur. I had a very moving illustration of that in my years as a foreign correspondent based in London. Over nearly 4 years, I was fortunate to be able to chronicle the dying days of East German communism. Here was a society adhering unquestioningly to the hidebound traditions of 50s Marxism, hiding behind the Berlin Wall from the changes that were sweeping the West, and indeed by that time the Soviet Union as well. In October 1989, the East German leader Erich Honecker marked the 40th anniversary of the communist state with the boast that the Berlin Wall would be around for another 100 years, which we duly reported. Barely a month later, it was my pleasure to report that the forces of social change had reduced the wall and East German communism to rubble. I still have a piece of that wall on my mantelpiece at home as a reminder of Erich Honecker's folly. So I leave you with this thought, which I believe holds as true for journalism as it does for your studies. Dare to question, dare to seek the truth in the time-honoured tradition of true scholarship. Set yourself high standards and embrace discipline as the natural partner of free inquiry. That way, you will all equip yourself with the ability to answer the challenges of tomorrow, as well as preserving the best of what the past bequeaths you. In the process, you will earn the gratitude of future generations of Haleburians and a nation which will be looking for your creative input as it wrestles with the challenges of a new century. Somewhere in the wings of this great hall, I suspect that the spirit of Charles Rendell will also be silently applauding you. Congratulations to the new school captain and other student office bearers. Congratulations also to the class of 93 who acquitted themselves so admirably. And congratulations to your principal as he embarks on his third decade in the job. I wish you all the best for 94 and beyond, not just as Haley men, but as future decision makers of this great country and as citizens of a changing world. Thank you.
A most impressive address, thanks Gordon. Interesting point that tradition and change are not necessarily incompatible. And finally, here's Bill with the answer to the quiz question.
Okay, Keith, and the answer is Dorothy Rendell, the daughter of Headmaster Charles Rendell. She commenced as a Haleby student in 1905. While she had a governess at times, Dorothy was a full-time student at Haleby right through until 1914.
Thanks, Bill. Hands up if you got that right. Well, that's it for this second From the Archives podcast. The next episode will be coming in the new year. If you've got a comment or a story you'd like to tell, please get in touch. My home email again, redhillsouth@icloud.com, one word, all lowercase. Voicemail will be nice if you can manage it, and don't forget your name and final year. This is Keith White signing off from the Archives, Series 1, Episode 2, December 2018. Thanks for listening.